Good morning. My name is Pat Ward. I'm the administrative law judge pursuant to temporary appointment designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon a request of the Public Service Commission to serve as the substantive hearing officer for this hearing. What that means is that I'll be making a recommended decision to the commission. The record will show that it's a little past 8:30 a.m., June 21st, 2012. We're in the PSC Commission Room, State Capitol, Bismarck, North Dakota. The time, date, and place set by the notice issued by the Public Service Commission on May 31st, 2012, in case number PU-12-160 et al., for a hearing regarding adjustments to switched access price schedules of the participating carriers. This is a consolidated hearing. There are a number of other companies involved with a number of other case numbers. If we need to resume again, we'll resume at 9:15 tomorrow. From what I understand from the attorneys, we should be able to complete the hearing in one day. Before proceeding with the hearing, I will ask the commission chairman, Chairman Calk, who plans to sit in for the hearing today, whether he has any comments he'd like to make.
Thank you, Judge. Just the only comment I'd make is just to reiterate what Judge Ward already said is that he's the hearing officer today, the substantive ALJ, if you will. The way it laid out with the commission is Commissioner Kramer had already committed to be representing the commission in Grand Forks, and then with Commissioner Clark's appointment to the FERC last Friday and Commissioner Fetch just being appointed yesterday, what this will lay out is that Judge Ward will make a recommendation to the commission. But for me personally, I had the day available. I wanted to sit in for the hearing in case we have some questions because as we're all tracking, this is very important issues, and we've got some timelines that we're under pretty quick. So I look forward to listening in and may have a question or two. But thank you for coming down.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, that's right. There is a obviously a fast track for this hearing and for the decision in this matter. There's an implementation date in the federal law of July 1st, so we're going to do everything we can to get this in place by then. The notice of filing and notice of hearing for this hearing specified the following issue to be considered and determined upon the hearing: whether the intrastate switched access price schedules filed by each of the companies in the cases enumerated should be approved by the North Dakota PSC. My understanding is that Mr. Hogue represents all companies listed in these consolidated cases. The companies and case numbers are as follows. I will call out the company name and case number, and then after I'm completed with that, Mr. Hogue, if you want to identify anyone that's here representing your companies or clients. Beck Communications Cooperative, case number PU-12-160. Consolidated Telecom, case number PU-12-199. Dakota Central Telecommunications Cooperative, case number PU-12-200. Dakota Central Telecom, Inc., case number PU-12-201. Dickey Rural Telephone Cooperative, case number PU-12-202. Dickey Rural Communications, Inc., case number PU-12-203. Griggs County Telephone Company, case number PU-12-204. Intercommunity Telephone Company, LLC, case number PU-12-205. Missouri Valley Communications, case number PU-12-206. Moore and Liberty Telephone Company, case number PU-12-207. Nemont Telephone Cooperative, case number PU-12-208. North Dakota Telephone Company, case number PU-12-209. Northwest Communications Cooperative, a cooperative association, case number PU-12-210. Polar Communications Mutual Aid Corporation, case number PU-12-211. Red River Rural Telephone Association, case number PU-12-212. Reservation Telephone Cooperative, case number PU-12-213. Turtle Mountain Communications, Inc., case number PU-12-214. United Telephone Mutual Aid Corporation, case number PU-12-215. West River Telecommunications Cooperative, case number PU-12-216, Wolverton Telephone Company, case number PU-12-217, and Dickey Rural Access, Inc., case number PU-12-233. Mr. Hogue, would you please state your appearance for the record and the appearance of any of your clients that you'd like to know?
Thank you, Your Honor. David Hogue, Pringle, and Herrickstead on behalf of all of the applicant companies. Ms. Remy Sun is here on behalf of Missouri Valley Communications, and I'm not sure of the other two. I'm sorry. West River.
I'm Cindy Hewitt, Dakota Central, and Dakota Central Telecom.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Grumman, please state your appearance for the record and the appearance of any member of the commission staff who might also participate in the conference.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mark Grumman, representing commission staff. To my left is Pat Fawn, Director of Compliance and Competitive Markets with the Public Service Commission.
Thank you. Is there anyone present today other than witnesses or representatives of the parties or the PSC or the commission who will or may testify or comment concerning this matter? Okay, seeing none, I won't go on with the rest of that. Mr. Hogue, you may proceed and call your first witness.
Your Honor, the applicant companies call Mr. Douglas Meredith.
I guess before we get to that, I suppose I should ask, do you want to make any kind of opening statement or?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Meredith, please raise your right hand. I'm required by law to advise you of the law in this state regarding perjury. Perjury is a false statement under oath of a material fact made by a person who knows or does not believe the statement to be true at the time it is made. Perjury is a Class C felony. A Class C felony is subject to a maximum penalty of 5 years imprisonment, a fine of $5,000, or both may be imposed. Having been advised of the penalty for perjury, please raise your right hand so I can administer the oath. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Yes.
Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Hogue.
Mr. Meredith, would you please state your full name and your business address, please?
Yes. My full name is Douglas Duncan Meredith. My business address is 547 Oakview Lane, Bountiful, Utah, 84010.
I know, Mr. Meredith, that you've provided your credentials in your pre-filed testimony, but would you briefly summarize those for the commission?
Sure. I'd be happy to. Good morning. As you're probably aware, I work for John Starolakis Incorporated. John Starolakis Incorporated is celebrating its 50th anniversary year this year in working with small rural telephone companies across the country. We are a management services company and deal with a variety of issues, both management, tariff, issues related to regulation at the federal level and at the state, various state levels. JSI has approximately a client base of about 200, 250 companies. We do about 140 cost studies for interstate purposes annually. My involvement with John Starolakis is I joined the firm in 1995 and have been working with them. I'm the Director of Economics and Policy. I deal with issues related to federal and state regulation for the variety of issues that come up before our clients. I also work as the Economic Advisor to the Public Service Commission in Puerto Rico, the Telecommunications Regulatory Board, and advise them on matters related to federal policy, state Puerto Rico policy, and also any matters related to pricing and disputes related to tariffs and or interconnection agreements. I've testified here numerous times in North Dakota, and also, as I identify in my testimony, I have experience in filing testimony and being subject to cross-examination in a number of other states.
Thank you. I put in front of you before before your testimony Exhibit 1. Can you identify that, please?
Yes. Exhibit 1 is pre-filed direct testimony that I have prepared in this the matter in the above-captioned cases that were identified earlier. It consists of 11 pages, and I do not have any corrections or modifications to this pre-filed direct testimony.
Would you like to summarize your testimony?
Yes, we'd be happy to. This matter is, as was indicated in the introduction, is a matter whether the rates that the various clients or various companies before you have filed are in compliance with the FCC's guidance to state commissions regarding the FCC's transformation order. As you are well aware, I'm sure, the FCC issued in November last year a major transformation order dealing with universal service and intercarrier compensation. And in that order, the FCC took actions that preempted states with regard to certain intrastate tariff rates for intrastate switched access service. And that preemption involved the scope of terminating service, not originating service. The FCC notified the states that originating service is next up, but they haven't taken action on originating services yet. So with regard to that transformation order, initiated a series of items that states and carriers involved in the states need to do. And that precipitated this particular hearing in dealing with a transformation or a change of terminating switched access service rates, intrastate rates, that eventually will be mirrored to the interstate rates next year in 2013. But in 2012, there is a step down from intrastate rates that are higher than their corresponding interstate rates. In November, that order came out, but the more important order for purposes of this hearing, I believe, is the June 5th order that just recently came out. And it's effective immediately for this particular matter, is that the FCC gave more guidance on how to actually fulfill the requirements that it put in November. And it gave quite a bit of latitude to individual carriers on how they were to reduce their rates if their intrastate rates revenues were higher than the interstate revenues on a corresponding basis. So my testimony lays out that particular guidance in the November order and also in the June order, and defines how you actually are, how I propose that the Commission look at this particular matter. And the key issue for the FCC is whether a company meets a 50% revenue difference. And let me explain what that means. The FCC wants carriers to calculate their intrastate rates and revenue, or their intrastate revenues based upon intrastate rates, and then recalculate that revenue amount using corresponding interstate rates. So that the difference between those two calculations will be a revenue difference. If the intrastate revenue is higher, then the carrier is instructed to reduce their intrastate rates so that the intrastate revenues are one-half. The difference is one-half of the difference between the interstate and intrastate revenue. So I describe that as the 50% revenue difference. And what the carriers are able to do is they have quite a bit of latitude, actually quite a bit of unilateral latitude on how to achieve that 50% revenue difference calculation. And so the testimony lays out that particular procedure, and then I believe we'll go into some exhibits, and I'll identify what those exhibits indicate regarding that test.
Thank you. Your Honor, I would offer Exhibit 1.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Exhibit 1 will be received.
Mark, do you need a copy?
That'd be great. Thank you.
Why don't we do that?
Thanks.
Pat?
I have it.
Okay.
I need mine
you
back.
You want a copy?
Yeah. you took mine.
Might be helpful.
Well, I brought it all down, so I'm dying to give it away.
Killed a few trees.
Mr. Meredith, I have put in front of you as well a document that's been marked as Exhibit 2. Could you identify that?
Yes. This is Exhibit 2. I've labeled it as Attachment DDM-1. It consists of 42 pages, and the pages are identified as PDF page 1 through PDF page 42. This particular document is company-specific. There are generally two pages per company, Each company, because of the LATA boundaries, usually will have two sets of intrastate rates based upon inter-LATA terminating access and intra-LATA terminating access. Those identifications can be found on the top left of each page. And this particular, if you examine page one, this particular exhibit identifies all of the terminating access rates for that particular jurisdiction, either intra or inter-LATA. It identifies the corresponding interstate rates, the state rates, and then it goes through a series of calculations to identify the state revenue that's based upon the intrastate rates and the corresponding federal revenue. And based upon that, as I described before, we can identify how much difference there needs, how much the rates need to go down. And that is identified and highlighted in yellow. That's a 50% reduction difference. And then the far right columns are the key columns, because these columns relate to the tariffs that have been filed. The rates in the second to last column are the rates that you can find in a corresponding tariff that has been filed. And by calculating that rate and multiplying it by the minutes of use related to this analysis, we can determine whether the summation, the difference, or the reduction in the last column, which is highlighted in blue, whether it matches the item highlighted in yellow. And if it does match, then it does confirm that the proposed rates in the second to last column actually produce a 50% reduction as required by the FCC.
Okay, so if I just back you up again.
Mm-hmm. You know, before you go further with questions about the exhibit, I just want to ask a couple of sort of simple questions. The acronym DDM, what exactly is that?
DDM are my initials.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And PDF is a print, a portable document format. It's used in Adobe Acrobat PDF.
I'm hoping that at some point you plan to explain exactly how the calculations were done. But before we get to that, because we are broadcasting this over the internet, one of the concerns I have is that some of the information, as I understand on this exhibit, is trade secret information. And there was a trade secret order put in place. Is that correct?
It is, Your Honor.
Okay. So maybe, we won't talk about the specific dollar amounts, but I would like you at some point in your presentation to explain to us just exactly how you get from the 0.029 to the 0.0079, like on that first one across. And with that being said, we can go ahead and if you want to offer the exhibit now, we can go get through that part of it. And
mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I will offer Exhibit 2.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
Exhibit 2 will be received.
Mr. Meredith, why don't we go through generically one of the company's data that's represented in Exhibit 2, and if you could explain each of the specific rates and the significance of each of the columns and why they're important.
Be happy to. Thank you. And let's just take as an example PDF page 1 and walk through that. As I mentioned, on the far left is the jurisdiction that this particular page is dealing with, so it's inter-LATA terminating access services for the company listed above. In that particular, in the far left column, there are a number of rate elements. CCL represents carrier common line, and in this particular company, there are two exchange groups. And so in addition to intra and inter-LATA, there's also exchange group 1 and exchange group 2. If we take that first, let me just go down for a minute. We have CCL, and then we have local switching service terminating local and office switching, information service, That's based upon a per 100 minute or per 100 messages. It's calculated or rated at 100 messages. And then we have local transport facility, and that is the actual facility going from one company to from one location to another. And tandem pass transport pass through or tandem transport facility, excuse me, that is indicated in parentheses as pass through are cases where a company is passing that transport facility using transport facility to get to another carrier that is not the inter-exchange carrier. And then we have line termination, which is another specific rate related to a particular exchange group that is used for, in this particular case, for a instance where it only applies to the one group because of a certain historical artifacts, I should say, purchases and acquisitions. And then we have transport termination, et cetera. So those are the rates. Those are the actual rate elements that are in the tariff. The first column is identified as interstate rates, and these are the original rates. These are the rates that were in the tariff for the various rate or functional equivalent rate elements on the interstate side. And as you can see, the first CCLs, the two carrier common lines, are zero because in the interstate jurisdiction, the FCC several years ago, almost a decade ago, had removed carrier common line from the access regime and moved it over to the costs related to carrier common line on the interstate side were then recovered through end user rates and also Federal Universal Service. So that's the first column is interstate rates coming from the interstate tariff. The second column is identified as a header. The header is identified as state rates, and these are the corresponding state intrastate rates or state rates related to the various rates that I've described. And in this first case, we do have a carrier common line rate of nearly 3 cents for this particular carrier. The third column is identified as MOU, which is signifies minutes of use. The FCC requires that we use the most recent, essentially last year's minutes of use to make this calculation or the rate difference. And so these are the minutes of use that were transmitted under the various tariff, the state tariff for the company. The fourth column is identified as a header as state miles hyphen BIP, and its BIP is billing interstate percentage. It's dealing with transport, and as you can see, the state miles BIP is zero in all instances except for where there's facility involved, for example, local transport facility, and this represents the percentage of. This represents a factor that is used in this calculation, in this worksheet, to convert the minute mile calculations that are used for transport, because transport is based upon mileage and minutes of use simultaneously. This particular factor is used so that it converts the state rate to it actually is able to be used so that you can use the state rate and then apply that factor and the minutes of use and get the appropriate revenue. For example, a company can have multiple instances where mileages are different because each exchange could have a different mileage distance. And this particular factor makes it so that you can use just one factor for the entire company for the appropriate rate. So you can think of it as a composite factor to convert minute mile into minute. Then the fifth column is identified as current state revenue, and that is the revenue simply applied. It's the state rates multiplied by the minutes of use, and that is the revenue for the reported period. The interstate miles BIP, we also have that factor for interstate because the state routes and the interstate routes can differ, and so we actually have to have another composite factor in order to deal with transport for the various transport, in this particular case, the tandem issues, the tandem factor, the tandem transport facility. Then the next column, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, seventh column over, is identified as current federal revenue with DT, and DT represents direct trunk or direct trunk transport. And this is the revenue, the federal revenue associated with the minutes of use based upon using the minutes of use times the interstate rates. So this is essentially the federal revenue, the hypothetical federal revenue that you would get if you used interstate rates instead of state rates for the appropriate for the demand that's listed. Then we get to the last two columns. The last two columns is identified or are identified as 2012 rate calculation reduction of 50% difference state and federal. And there's a column identified as rate, and then there's a column identified as revenue. This is the column that is key because these are the new rates that are being proposed by the company, by the carrier for approval. For use in the first part of July. And these are the rates that are to be changed, or portions of these rates can be changed, according to the June 5th order, to make sure that the revenue difference occurs. So in this particular scenario, you can observe that pretty much every single rate, if I just double check, let me just make sure. Every single rate, except for the first two, are identical to the state rate column. And this means that this particular company has chosen to reduce the carrier common line rate elements only. Everything else is identical to the state rate structure. And they are going to reduce, they're proposing to reduce the carrier common line rates from 3 cents, up almost 3 cents, to a very, very low number below, you know, 0.7, almost 0.8, to meet the 50% difference reduction. Now, there was quite a bit of discussion on actually how to actually perform the 50% reduction. And in June 5th order, the FCC said states can pick whatever rate they want in order to hit the 50% reduction. So they have total discretion to use a few rates, use all the rates, and in fact, you can even increase a rate if it's lower than the intrastate. If it's lower than the interstate, you can actually increase a rate in order to get to the 50% reduction. And so in this particular case, you can observe that the reduction in the carrier common line rate for exchange group 1 and 2, multiply that by the minutes of use, again, by the demand that we're dealing with, and that's constant, we get a revenue amount. And by calculating the revenue amount, we can determine the difference in the, essentially what the difference is in the state, between the state and the proposed state rates. And that results in the blue highlight. The blue highlight down below is equal or greater than the yellow highlight, then the 50% rate reduction is met. And the 50% reduction in this first step in terminating access service, switched access service, has been satisfied by looking at the FCC rule.
Mr. Meredith, let me just interrupt and ask a couple questions. As I understand what you're telling us then, the tariffs that were filed that are in DDM 3, they're based on having made these calculations and these adjustments for each of these companies, these 20-some companies, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and those tariffs reflect how that particular company chose to make this adjustment to get to the 50% factor.
Correct.
Okay, and I guess the question that I would have is, are we going to go through all 20-some companies to talk about how each of them arrived at it, or to your knowledge, did they all use the CCL as the basis for the adjustment?
I don't believe we have to go through each one, but we certainly can.
Okay.
Most of them, the majority of them use the CCL adjustment. There are a few cases where the company has moved to the rate structure that will exist next year, which is what we call it, local transport reform or restructure. It's LTR. You'll hear that term and you'll see it identified. When a company has elected to go to LTR, then they choose to use the interstate rate structure for their intrastate rates, their intrastate services. And the FCC requires this in 2013, but it's not mandatory in 2012. So next year, guess what? You'll see other. You'll see additional changes to the tariffs for July 2013, so that the companies will make the next step in an 8 or 9 step process to according to the FCC's transformation order.
Going back to PDF 1, the first page of the exhibit, just so you know, we're all clear, and I think I'm understanding how this has been done on the case of Beck. If we look at the column that says current state revenue, at the bottom of that, those numbers are totaled.
Correct.
And then we look the next two columns over at the current federal revenue, there's a total for all those numbers.
Correct.
And then you subtract one from the other, and that's how you get the number below that?
Yes, you get that, and that's the difference between Fed to state, and then the 50% reduction is just one half of that.
Okay.
That's how you get the yellow box.
Okay, that I understand. Now, to get from the yellow box to the blue box, you go to the final two columns, and you can see where the adjustment has been made in the rates.
Yes.
And where those rates vary from the rates in column two is where an adjustment has been made to pick up the difference, the 50%.
Yes. Well, the aggregate, the number in the far right column is the revenue, and you see that that particular number is totaled. And the blue box is the difference between the current state revenue aggregate and the proposed state revenue aggregate.
Now, one of the questions I have, and it doesn't relate specifically to the exhibit, but is the federal government allowing these companies to make up this lost revenue in some other way?
Yes, yes. In part. Let me explain. The FCC has preempted states for intrastate terminating access, as I mentioned before. They're also incorporated a access recovery charge, or an ARC. This access recovery charge is going to be applied to end users. So a portion of this revenue difference will be recovered through an ARC that end users will pay. It's a monthly fee, approximately 50 cents per month per line for a residential customer, and it maximum fee over 6 years will be $3. So there'll be a $3 essentially in 6 years. Companies will assess end users an additional $3 per line per month for this type of service.
So, and by end users, mean the consumers.
Yeah, the consumers. Okay. And then, since that ARC is capped at 50 cents per month, or 50 cents per month, and it's eventually capped at $3 per month per year, or per line, I should say, there's also going to be a difference after that, and that particular difference is going to be recovered through a Connect America Fund recovery mechanism. It's a new federal universal service program. However, that's revenue is only going to represent a portion of these revenues. The FCC is capping or is reducing the eligible costs for recovery every year. They're reducing it by 5% every year. And so as far as the revenue requirement goes, the companies will see a reduction in recovery from the federal side over time, necessitating most likely action by this commission for relief as a total company, because they will not be getting rate of return levels. They won't have the opportunity to recover that in the interstate jurisdiction. In the state jurisdiction, some states are very concerned about that because they want to make sure the companies remain viable and have good financial sound foundation. So in answer to your question, the FCC has made allowances to recover a majority of those costs through end users and through a federal universal service recovery mechanism, but not all of the costs will be recovered.
Thank you.
Right. Let me clarify. I'm sorry. As far as the reduction applies to the interstate revenue requirement, not the intrastate. I need to clarify. Let me back up and clarify. I recall a difference. The reduction that I'm describing is the FCC is reducing. They have a. I upon reflection, I'm okay. I don't have to make a correction.
Okay.
My testimony is good as it stands.
All right. I believe, and I thank you very much for that explanation. I believe Chairman Koch may have a couple questions. So.
Yeah, thanks, Your Honor. Just the follow-up what the judge was talking about, is there somewhere in here that shows impact to consumers that's easy to understand?
Not no, because this particular proceeding is limited only to the tariff change. We're just looking at the tariff change and meeting this 50% reduction. Impact to consumers would take into account this access recovery charge mechanism and how it will deal with how consumers will deal with in 3 years a $3 per month increase.
Some states have questioned this ruling, if you will. Do you know about that, whether some of the states have said, no, we're not going to implement this?
Some, I don't know if states are saying they're not going to implement July 1. I do know that some states have engaged the FCC in a federal court appeal of the authority of the FCC to preempt the states, because they're essentially taking away your authority, Commissioner, to regulate intrastate services. But that appeal is sitting now in the Tenth Circuit in Denver, and will be heard in due time, in due course. But I don't recall any states saying, "Oh, we're not going to do any implementation on July 1."
So we can figure out impact to the companies, but we really can't necessarily break that down to impact to the consumers, even if it was in the scope of this case.
The consumers will be affected in July because there will be a federal, most likely every company, subject to check, every company will be imposing a 50 cent per line per month increase, or in a new access recovery charge. It's a federal charge. You could think of it similar to a subscriber line charge, the federal subscriber line charge that's applied, but it could be a separate line item, or it can be rolled into that particular charge on the customer's bill. So the customers will see a 50 cent per month increase in their basic service starting July.
Now, okay, I guess the question that sort of begs is that going to show on the bill as a specific sort of federal tax kind of charge?
Yes, the FCC has given two options to carriers. The first option is to have a separate line item called a federal access recovery charge, and it would represent 50 cents. The second option for a carrier is to include that federal access recovery charge into the existing line item for the federal subscriber line charge, which is generally $6.50. And so the customer will either see a new line item with 50 cents on the bill, on their bill, or they will see an increase in an existing line item from $6.50 to $7.
Now, and again, it isn't going to be a total balance, but these same customers will see a correlating decrease in their charges, theoretically, because you're basically making up lost revenue. You're kind of moving it from column A to column B. Would that be a fair statement?
With one very significant footnote, the changes that we're making will affect the inter-exchange carriers. The long-distance providers pay these rates that we're dealing with. And so to make your statement correct, we have to assume that the inter-exchange carriers will pass through the savings dollar for dollar to their end users. If they do not pass through their savings dollar for dollar, then there will not be a corresponding savings to the consumer in the aggregate. Furthermore, there's quite a bit of difference between who uses long distance and who doesn't. And a customer who does not use long distance obviously wouldn't see any savings in their long distance bill because they don't have one, but they will see an increase in their local service. So the FCC's actions actually creates a situation where the long-distance customer of the inter-exchange carrier is likely to receive a benefit, but it's predicated on the assumption that the market is very competitive and that the IXCs, the inter-exchange carrier or long-distance providers, will reduce their rates. Does that help?
Yep, thank you very much. Very, very, very informative.
So let me just finalize my statement here. Is on each page with the blue and yellow, you can go through and you can see, and in fact I can affirm that in every case except for one, the blue and the yellow match exactly. So penny to the penny,
there is a 50% reduction in the rates, and they satisfy the FCC's rule. In one instance, however, the case is that they're subject to some rounding. There was a company that filed this with their tariff, and as a result, there's a $1.40 difference that can be observed. And let me get to that page. I won't identify the company. I'll just give you the page number. It is on PDF page 36 and 37. These particular exhibits were filed with the tariff, with the commission, and so I did not want to make any changes. I did not put yellow or blue on these two pages because they've already been filed with the commission, and I didn't want to alter them in any way. The only thing I did with these pages is attach or add the header to identify it as attachment DDM1 and PDF page 36 and PDF page 37. But you can... you can see that if you look at the last three columns, that the numbers, the blue, where it would be blue and yellow, do not match exactly, and it's really just simply because of rounding error, and it's off by $1.40. And so I don't think it is material to the commission's judgment as to whether they meet or not meet the 50% reduction, because it's just a rounding error.
Mr. Hogue, do you have anything else on this exhibit?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay,
thank you.
Go ahead. What I'm going to do, I guess I asked a lot more questions than I normally would, but I think it's really important that everybody in the room understand this exhibit, because that will, you know, be instructive for looking at all the other exhibits. So what I'm going to do is, when you finish with the witness with just this first couple pages of the exhibit with the first company, I am going to give Mr. Grumman and Mr. Fine an opportunity to question on it, and Commissioner Calkagan as well.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that everybody understands this, because it's somewhat complicated if you don't look at this every day. Mm-hmm. And then we can move forward from there with whatever you had planned.
Understood.
Mr. Hogue, may I just add one more opposite, tie one loose end that I mentioned in our colloquy that might be helpful. If you turn to PDF page 5, this is a company that has chosen to move to LTR or move to the interstate rate structure this year, as opposed to waiting till next year. And as you can see, the CCL, the state rate is there, but then over in the far left, the second to last column, that CCL has gone to zero. And so they're actually mirroring the rate structure of the interstate rates. And as a result, there's going to be a difference in a fudge factor or an adjustment factor. And that adjustment factor is identified as transitional rate parentheses LTR. It's the last rate listed on the left side. And that transitional rate LTR is added so that we are able to meet the 50% reduction. That particular LTR or transitional rate LTR will eventually go away next year in 2013, because we will have the exact rates and the rate structure of the interstate side. But this is one example of a company, and I think there's four in total in this proceeding, that has chosen to go to LTR this year as opposed to wait till next year. And you will see the transitional rate LTR listed on those pages only. Or populated on those pages only. You might see the actual item, but it won't be populated for the other companies.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Meredith, you mentioned the June 5 FCC clarification order, and I thought what I heard you say is it gave states discretion to adjust the formulas in order to meet the 50%, and I had the impression it really gave the discretion to the carriers.
Yes, if I said states, I misspoke. In my direct testimony, I specifically identify that the discretion is given to the carriers. So the carriers can choose which rate. This is on page 9, lines 18, starting with line 18. It says the FCC's June 5th order establishes a process
whereby the RLEX have considerable unilateral flexibility in meeting the B2 Romanet 3 step in excess revenue reduction. And that refers to a certain part of the rule that I identified earlier in my testimony.
That leads to another question that I had. The original tariff was filed around May 15th or May 16th, I think.
Yes.
But yet, when I went to compare DDM3 when I got it yesterday or the day before to the original tariffs, I didn't see a lot of differences. So did you see it coming? I mean, did you know
yes.
the June 5th order was coming?
We had discussed, JSI had discussions with FCC staff, because it's not only the issue of how you do the actual rates. And so we said, well, we're going to go with CCL, and the FCC didn't object to that particular process. So they essentially confirmed the process. But the more telling issue in the June 5th order, the more compelling argument was that there are, in some cases, the state rate is lower than the interstate rate. And what do you do there? And the FCC in the June 5th order allowed states to raise that rate, if they wanted to the interstate rate level in 2012. That was not done in any of these cases, because our particular position was, if the state rate's lower, then you have to stay there, and you have to essentially wait for the tide to come in. But the FCC gave even additional latitude to rates that are lower, state rates that are lower than the interstate rate. They actually will go up to the interstate rate level if the carrier is involved in this 50% reduction process in 2012.
So is there are you proposing on behalf of those companies in that situation any rate increase?
No, they have no one has decided in this from June 5th till now that increase should occur. They have the opportunity in a couple of months, if they needed to come in and revise their tariff at any under the normal process, but I don't anticipate that happening until next year.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Meredith. If we go, I just want to go back and clarify another point on Exhibit 2. The column that's entitled Current State Revenue, that represents actual revenue when we take the state rates times the minutes of use. Is that correct?
That represents state revenues based upon using those minutes of use, which was last year's fiscal year. So it's not current 2012, but it's prior year.
Right. Mm-hmm. If we skip over to the column entitled Current Federal Revenue, I wanted to make sure that it's clear that that doesn't represent actual revenue. That's hypothetical revenue based on applying the intrastate rates
to state demand.
Right.
Right. Yes, that's right. And I think I did use hypothetical in describing it, but we should emphasize that current federal revenue with DT is a hypothetical construction saying what would our revenues be if we use the interstate rates for state service.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep.
I'm done with Exhibit 2 if you want to.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Mr. Grumman.
Mr. Hogue or Judge, do you have any problem with allowing Pat Fawn to just ask questions directly?
No objection.
Okay.
That's fine.
Mr. Fawn, you had some questions?
I guess I'm going to use the term foundation. I think it applies. But the foundation for the minutes of use, 2011, would be the billing statements of the companies?
Yes.
Okay. And the foundation for the state rates, current state rates, of course, would be the rates on file with the commission.
On file before the current filing, yes.
Yeah.
So it would be before the May filing, yes.
The one that I don't know much about is the billing interstate percentage, the foundation for those percentages.
Yes. Let me explain that a little bit more detail. The as I mentioned, the billing state miles hyphen BIP is a factor that allows us to use composite miles for minute mile rates. And the foundation for that is that to create that particular factor, a company used their current state revenues, the state revenues from last year, and actually backed into that state miles BIP using the appropriate state rates. So with that factor, it represents all of the different route miles that a carrier has. and it's composited into one factor so that it can be used to match the state revenue number. So the foundation was to use the revenue and then back into that factor so that the revenues represent the total company revenues when we apply it to the appropriate facility rate. Does that help?
I guess a little bit more.
Okay, go ahead.
Question. If you take the total revenue from the transport, is that what you're talking
Correct.
About?
Yes, we're talking about transport facility.
What are you dividing that revenue by? What number would you divide it by?
The revenue, you would divide it essentially by the state rate. That's the state rate that's reported to create the factor to be used. The other way to do this would have been to have a very, very detailed list of every single route, because every single route, transport route, would have a different mileage associated with it, and we would have to calculate the revenue for every single route. Instead of doing that, we've said the equivalent procedure would be to take the total revenue from those routes for the appropriate year, for the fiscal year, and then take the transport facility rate, the state rate that we've listed here, and we adjust the factor so that they match, so that when we do the product or we do the multiplication of the state rate times the factor, that we get the times the minutes, we get the current state revenue. So there are three items that generate the current state revenue on those transport routes. We multiply the state rate times the minutes of use times this factor. And we knew what the minutes of use were. We know what the state rate is as reported, and we know what the current state revenue is. And so the factor is just simply the difference. It's simply the number that's used to create the equality. That help?
I think I got it.
Okay.
But I do, just for my own mm-hmm. confirmation, those local transport facility rates under the state rates there, though, because there are several different rate mileage bands, correct?
There are.
And that's why that's why we have five different rates here.
You have different, you have different exchange groups. Yes. Yes, that's okay. Correct.
And within those ranges, you have facilities that are different mileages within, let's say it's 0 to 10 miles. You might have a 7-mile-long facility. You might have a 6-mile-long facility. And so this is composite rate, just averages out all within a rate band, within a mileage band. It averages out your facilities.
Yes, you've got it. The factor is a composite of all those independent rate routes with different miles. The factor is a composite in order to make sure that the rate band facility times the minutes equals the appropriate revenue. Yes.
Okay, I think I got it. I don't know.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me just see if I've got it, too. We look at local transport facility exchange group 1 on that front page.
Yes.
Okay. We have a state rate that's a 0.03 and an MOU 81,000-something.
Yes, which is a confidential number.
So if I multiply 0.03 times 81,000 times 0.84, I'm going to get the current state revenue in the next column?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Mr. Hogue, you can proceed.
I don't have anything further on Exhibit 2.
Okay. Does anybody else, Commissioner? Okay. We can move on.
Okay. Mr. Meredith, I also put in front of you Exhibit number 3, and I would ask that you identify that as well.
Yes. Exhibit number 3 is identified as Attachment DDM-2 in my testimony, and it consists of 108 pages identified as PDF page 1 through 108. These are pages related to the individual company's tariff that was filed. For example, the first 3, 4, 5. I gotta get the binder off. The first 4 pages relate to Beck Communications Cooperative, just because they get the benefit of being up on first on the list of alphabetical. And this represents the tariff pages that were filed in May to correspond to the 50% revenue reduction. This particular exhibit allows the commission to see that the rates in exhibit 2 of my testimony, attachment 1, the rates in the second to last column are actually the rates that were filed. And that is the case in every single one of these pages. If you go through, you can see that there are that they correspond to the rates that that are filed. And there are five differences, however. So go to PDF page 4. And you'll see in 17.2.4, subpart D, there's a box. And that box identifies a change that has been filed electronically with the commission yesterday and will be filed in paper today. There's some Scrivener's errors that had to be corrected. And so that 0.76 should actually be 0.0076. There are five instances there, and I've identified those in my testimony. And so the boxes are essentially changes to the May filing that have been effective, or that are asked to be effective for the July filing. But other than that, everything comports with the exhibit 2.
So in exhibit 3, exhibit 3 is a restatement of the May filed tariffs on behalf of all of the companies, with the noted corrections for the boxes where companies are following up and making corrections to numerical errors that were made in the filing. Is that what the boxes represent?
The boxes represent corrections that have been made or will be made official with a filing. And there's only five instances there in my testimony. On page 10, line 22, I identify those companies. They are Beck, North Dakota Central, Telephone Cooperative, Dickey Rural Access, and North Dakota Telephone. And I indicate that the tariff changes in the boxes are the result of Scrivener's errors, and these revisions are being prepared to be filed with the commission. And I have since received confirmation that they have been filed with the commission and in electronically and will be filed today in paper.
Okay. Mr. Meredith, except for those Scrivener's errors, is DDM 2 or Exhibit 3 identical to the tariff that was filed on May 16th, or are there some additional pages?
There are additional pages. These are the only pages that relate to the 2012.
Okay.
There are additional pages to the tariff, and I mentioned in – and let me talk about that because it's very important.
Okay, because I thought I saw some I didn't think it was an exact match when I went through this yesterday.
Yeah. So. No, for sake of the trees, we didn't print all the pages out. But on page 11 of my testimony, I indicate – on line 4, there's a question about 2013 and beyond. The actions taken by the FCC on June 5th will require all of the companies, or most all of the companies, to file corrections to their 2013 and beyond schedule. The FCC indicates that if your state rate is lower than your interstate rate, that in fact in 2013 it must be equal to the interstate rate if you are a carrier that has to engage in this revenue reduction process, this 50% reduction. By the way, all of the companies except for Wolverton are in that category. Wolverton does not qualify for revenue reduction because its state revenues are lower than the interstate rate. But aside from Wolverton, all of the companies will be making revisions to their May filing for 2013. But we did not want to make that change just yet because who knows what other surprises the FCC will have in the next months as they get through this process. They may have additional guidance that will require revision. And so we will wait for the 2013 cycle to make the 2013 changes and do that in due course so that they will be effective under the normal procedures. And that way, the 2013 to 2020 schedules will be modified accordingly that are in the existing tariff.
I'm going to offer Exhibit 3, Your Honor.
Any objection?
No, Your Honor.
No. Exhibit 3 will be admitted.
You need this.
Just a follow-up question to Commissioner Kalk's question. So I want to make sure I understand that the immediate net effect of these tariff filings is that the rural companies will receive less interstate access revenue.
Yes. They will be billing less for the intrastate access services that they provide to interexchange carriers. They will be receiving offset to that loss through two mechanisms. One is this access recovery charge applied to end-user customers, and also the recovery mechanism that the FCC has provided. However, that won't make that won't be dollar for dollar. The FCC is essentially giving the companies a haircut, if I can use that term. They're reducing the amount of eligible cost recovery that they can that they're eligible for.
And the companies may impose the 50 cent per access line charge back to end user customers, correct?
Yes, the ARC is applied to end user customers. Carriers within the NECA regime and subject to check. I'll have to check the rule, but I believe that that is a requirement. I mean, all the NECA companies, NECA is filing an ARC and is expecting carriers to charge it. Now, can a carrier elect not to charge it? That's their opportunity, but they won't have any recovery of that if they don't charge it. They would have to essentially forego that revenue through the revenue streams that are allowed for recovery.
And then you mentioned on the IXC side they will be the immediate beneficiary of the lower tariff because they'll be paying less in terms of interstate access.
Yes, the interexchange carriers are immediate beneficiaries starting in July with the new rate structure because they will be paying less for the services that they had been paying for before, and hope upon hope that they pass that on to end user customers. But there's no requirement. The FCC doesn't require interexchange carriers to pass it through. They're expecting the competitive market landscape to make that correction.
Okay.
And we'll just have to wait and see if that happens. There are many cases where that doesn't happen because of the competitive marketplace is not as robust as the FCC assumes.
Okay. Thank you. Your Honor, I don't have any further questions.
Mr. Grumman, questions for Mr. Meredith?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Fine?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioner?
Maybe a question, comment, just to see where it goes. The previous questions by Mr. Hogue, I mean, that was exactly what I was talking about, but what would you, just your own opinion, that the fact that none of those inter-exchange carriers chose to intervene in this case, do you think that means they're happy with the matrix that you put together, or do you think that I can't assume that by anything?
Well, we've had discussions with we've had informal discussions with some of them. We've had some discussions with interexchange carriers, and they understand the process. They understand the June 5th order, and they understand, I believe, that we hit the 50% revenue reduction number that is required. And so they are. I can't speak for them as to whether they're happy. Their state of happiness. But they will be receiving benefit because of the rates that they're paying, and you know they can't they don't have the ability, based upon the June 5th order, to say, oh, you should have changed this rate instead of that rate.
As long as the 50%.
As long as the 50% is met, they don't. There's not an issue for an interchange carrier.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have just a couple questions. One on the exhibit. A few minutes ago, you talked about I asked you about the differences in the number of pages and some of the documents included in Exhibit 3, which is DDM 2, versus the tariff that was originally filed. And you talked about some of the forward-looking, you know, beyond July 1st things that are. Can you just give me, point a few of the pages out to me within the exhibit that relate to that?
The pages that are in my exhibit, this is Exhibit 3, Attachment DDM 2, only have the pages that are related to the 2012. So I asked staff to cull a 600-page document down to 100 pages. And so all we have is the pages that relate to the 2012 rates. So I cannot, and from this exhibit, I cannot show you the table. I don't know if council has a copy of the May filing, but we could take a recess and probably find one in the files of the commission, so I could show you the table that I'm referring to.
Okay. Maybe we can do that off the record. Okay. after a few minutes here. But the other question that I have is, I'm assuming that you've been involved in similar proceedings in other states. Have any other states already issued orders approving these adjustments?
There are a couple of states. I looked yesterday and asked, and actually beat all the bushes, so to speak. Went around and asked my colleagues to see if they had any information. And we do not yet know of any state, from JSI standpoint, that has actually issued an order dealing with July 1st requirements that incorporates the June 5th order. There are a couple of states that have I understand have filed orders before June 5th regarding this matter, but they don't incorporate the June 5th decision, of course, because it was predated. Their particular action predated the June 5th order. So we are awaiting action in virtually every state for this process. Now, there are some states that don't have a hearing or have an order because these are tariff changes, and the companies have made the appropriate changes within a 30-year, usually a 30-day. You file it, and 30 days is effective, and that's
just use
normal course of business type of a thing. In this particular case, there have been some changes within that 30-day time frame, and so that's the order needs to speak to, you know, giving the companies a waiver or grant some latitude in that 30-day file and use if the state has a 30-day file and use. But other states have 30-day file and use, and people have used it, and they don't even have a hearing. In other states, there have been hearings. There have been, you know, discussions some similar to this to explain the process. And we're awaiting orders from those states to make those tariffs effective in those states.
Mr. Hogue.
Your Honor, I did bring with me Iowa issued a decision, but it's, as Mr. Meredith said, it's before the June 5th FCC order. South Dakota has one, and I understand that Montana just approved it this week. So there's three.
Okay, anything else for Mr. Meredith?
No, not for me.
Okay, Mr. Meredith, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Hogue.
Your Honor, that concludes our presentation of evidence and exhibits.
Mr. Grumman.
Your Honor, actually, it's my understanding we are going to be having, or there's going to be something done off the record. And I actually have a question that I'd like to pose to Mr. Hogue off the record as well. So at this point, could we?
Okay, let's take a recess now for about 10 minutes.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
Some directors over there, the impact of the directors. Is that appropriate to this?
hearing at all?
Commissioner Calk, I don't have any objection to it.
I'd just be curious, just as a maybe more background than anything, that how the companies are going to adjust to this. And we talked about impact to the consumers, but impact to the companies, changes they might have to make. And I understand it may not be tied directly to what we're trying to get here today, but the overarching telecom debate going in the state and the country would maybe be helpful if that, maybe 5 minutes or something. We could do that after break just to
Why don't we take a little break now, and Mr. Hogue, if one or more of your clients would be willing to get up here and you know,
sure,
let us know what they think about this, that'd be interesting. So,
okay.
We'll take a 10-minute recess.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thank you.